Today is Saturday, January 28th, 2023, and we are celebrating OA Birthday Sacramento Style. And I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening, Mary S. from Stockton.
Happy birthday, happy 63rd birthday, Overeaters Anonymous, and happy birthday to all of my fellow travelers. My name is Mary. I am a compulsive overeater. I am a carb addict. I am a chronic relapser. So no, I'm not saying that in order to have the longest introduction ever recorded, but I'm saying that to be totally honest, transparent, and this word that I absolutely hate, vulnerable. Say that with me, vulnerable. I hate that word. But one day at a time, I am enjoying recovery today. I'm so grateful for this invitation. Thank you, Jan. I'm grateful for the time that has been allotted me to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And if you believe in the power of prayer, I just ask that you would lift up a prayer for me. Today I want to talk to you about three F's. And take a deep breath. Let it out. I'm not going to be cursing at you, and I'm not going to be using a bunch of four-letter words. But what I want to speak to you today about is the three F's that I found in this program. The first one is fear. The second one is faith. And the third one is the fatal nature of our disease, or my disease. I began my journey in Overeaters Anonymous in Chicago, Illinois, in March of 1985. I entered the rooms of a field house in Washington Park. There were probably about 20 individuals sitting around the table, men, women, all various sizes, all various ethnic backgrounds, just a diverse group of people. But what I heard at that very first meeting was life-changing for me. I heard people talk about this disease and how it affected them. And they talked about food in a way that I never, ever could have shared with another person. I found my very first sponsor at my very first OA meeting. And she was a godsend. And she's with God now. Her name is Dorothy. What I really loved about Dorothy is the way that she spoke. She spoke so eloquently. Her voice was smooth like silk. Coming from a dysfunctional household, hearing somebody speak and talk in such a loving and kind way, I immediately asked her to be my sponsor, and she agreed. If she had asked me to jump to the moon, I would have been trying to do that. Whatever she asked me to do, I didn't question. Well, I did question it. Let me not lie. If she had asked me to do anything, I would have tried to do my best. When I came in the program, I weighed over 250 pounds. I refused to get on the scale because I didn't want to know that I weighed more than that. But what I really enjoyed about Dorothy and her sponsorship was that she knew the big book backwards and forwards. She could quote me the page that I needed. She took none of my crap. Anytime I wanted to whine about what was going on in my life, she would just stop and say in this sweet voice, "But what was your part in it, dear?" And that would just grind, I mean, that would just get on my nerves. It was like I would tell her about my alcoholic husband and how he was staying out all night and running the streets. And she would just look at me so sweetly and say, "I know, but what was your part in it?" And I never knew, well, I didn't know at the time, but I found out later, that I had a part even in that drama. And my part was that I allowed this individual to come back home and treat me like a doormat. That was my part. And I was glad to do it. Unfortunately, I hate to say that. But anyway, Dorothy was a rock. And she was a person that took me through a couple of steps. What happened to me was my first relapse my favorite brother died of sickle cell anemia. And I remember we were all gathered together, and someone put a plate of pasta in front of me, and I inhaled it. And I was looking for more and more and more. What I didn't realize was that I was trying to fill a gap, a grief hole, that food would never, ever fill. The only thing that would fill that hole was God, but I didn't know it at the time. So that started me back up and down, up and down. And so I lost my place. But you know what? Another thing that my sponsor told me, she told me several things that I remember even to this very day, 30-something years later. One of them was to stay in the present. And I couldn't understand what she meant by that. But later, as I look back, I was always ashamed of my past. I was always upset and hurt because of some misstep that I had done in the past. I was always regretting some mistakes that I made. And then I would be future tripping, you know. I was looking at the future and I was dreading the future. What if this happens? What if that happens? And she would just say so calmly, stay in the moment, stay in the present. Because the bottom line is that there's nothing, absolutely nothing I could do about the past but learn from it. And the future was not mine to hold. I couldn't even enjoy the present because I was worried about all these other things. So she gave me some really, really good advice. But we parted company. And what I have to say is that, let me get into fear. On page 67 in the big book, there is a statement that says, notice that the word fear in the brackets alongside the difficulty with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil, corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. We felt we didn't deserve it, but did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classified with stealing. It seems it causes more trouble. What a powerful quote that is, and so profound. When I think about my own fears, and there is a myriad of them, fear of failure, fear of success, fear of the unknown, fear of the known, fear of what you will think about me, fear of what if things don't go right. Fears just riddled my whole existence. I don't know about you, but I had the fear of public speaking. When I thought about standing up in front of strangers and speaking publicly, I would get physically ill to the point that I would throw up. But here I am standing today. My God has a sense of humor. That is all I have to say. Here I am standing today, working my way through my fears one day at a time. Fear was so paralyzing for me. It kept me from doing things that I knew that I could accomplish. But I was afraid of falling short. It kept me from being my best self. I was so bound up and worried about what other people would think about me or what they might say about me or how they might feel about me. All of this is in my head. Most people are so consumed with their own thoughts, they don't have time to even think about you. So why were you worried about what other people thought? That was not even my concern. Today I can stand and work my way through my fears. Yes, sometimes they are crippling. Sometimes they are frightening. If you were watching me sitting over in that chair, rubbing my hands and wringing my fists, you knew that I was fearful. But I have a power source in my life that is greater than any fear that I have. And that brings me to the second F, faith. It took me many, many a year to honestly take the third step. You know, I struggled with it because I didn't have a loving relationship with a higher power. I was religious, all right. Went to church every single Sunday. Even went to Sunday school, taught Sunday school. But what I was lacking was an intimate relationship with a power greater than myself. And it took me to come into the rooms of OA to get to that place. That is why prayer and meditation is one of my favorite steps. That is why every day, before my feet hit the ground, I go through steps 1, 2, and 3. I admit that I'm powerless over this disease and that my life is unmanageable, but I know that there is a power greater than me who is able to help me. And so faith has become a large part of my life. So the higher power that I used to have was a old man that was sitting high in lofty places. He was writing down every single thing that I did wrong. And on the final day, when I presented myself in front of him, and he opened the book and put the DVR on and showed me all of that stuff that I did, he slammed the book shut, and he would tell me, "Depart to the lower parts of the earth." That was the God that I had. So somebody told me, why don't you fire that God? Why don't you get a God of your own understanding? And you know, recently I even wrote out a want ad for my God. You know, and my religious upbringing was telling me, what do you mean you wrote a want ad for God? Are you crazy? But this is what it sounded like. One insecure, childish, self-centered adult needs a loving, caring, compassionate, non-judgmental higher power. Must be very intuitive and read my mind. Must be able to give clear directions. Must be on call at all times, 24/7. Must be able to quiet all the fears and lead me lovingly in all of my directions. Must not listen to my whining or my complaining or grumbling. Must help me to be willing to be led and directed by this supreme being. And that's the kind of God that I have today. A loving, benevolent, higher power. One that is concerned, yes, with what I put in my mouth. There were years that I thought, God is trying to hold this universe in place. He's got these people over here killing each other. He's got these people over here acting a fool. He doesn't have time to think about what I'm putting in my mouth. But because I have a loving relationship with him, and I mean every single day, I spend quiet time with my higher power, trying to get directions for the day. And because of that, I know that he loves me in my totality. And he cares because he knows that when I'm out of control, my world is out of control. And so I check in with him on a daily basis. That is where my faith is today, and a loving higher power who loves me unconditionally and who guides me and who directs my thoughts. I wish I could tell you the number of years that I skipped over chapter 4. Anybody know what chapter 4 is in the big book? The chapter to the agnostics. I would just look at that and say, huh, I don't need that, and never read it. Well, guess what? I found myself in it a couple of days ago, and one of the things that I found is I found myself in those pages. Sure, I had a belief in God. I had a knowledge of God. I believed that God could do all these different things, but did I really have that trusting relationship in him that I needed to have in order to be in recovery? Our literature talks about that type of person, that person being more difficult than the atheist and the agnostic, those that have some knowledge of God, you know. But how big is your God? How big is your God? Is your God big enough to withstand? My God is big enough to withstand my questioning. He's big enough to wrestle with me when I go through those deep, dark places. My God is able to pull me up out of there. And so if you don't hear me say anything today, I want you to find that higher power, whatever it might be, to help you get through these dark days. So, on page 52 of the big book, it said, it says, we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply, this shouldn't apply to our human problem. The same readiness to change our point of view. When we are having trouble with personal relationships, we couldn't control our emotional natures. Is that my time? Okay. We were prey to misery and deep depressions. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people and not a basic solution to the bedevilment. More important than whether we should see newsreels of flights or whatever. I'm getting lost up in this part. But we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. And you know what? I had to resign from the debating society. There was a time I would argue down to the ground. Abstinence, there's one camp that says abstinence, the most important thing without exception. And then here's the faithful people, no, God is the most important thing without exception. Well, guess what? I have discovered that when I am compulsively overeating, the very first thing to leave is my spiritual life. If I'm into the food, I don't have time. I can't get up in the morning and have a quiet time with God. I can't do any of those things because I am consumed with thoughts of food. So it's not that you have to have one or the other. It has to be both for me. I have to have abstinence, but I also have to rely on a power that is greater than myself to lead and guide and direct my life. And then for me, this was the most important thing that I read in that chapter on page 53. When we became alcoholics or compulsive overeaters, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly, here's that word again, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And my choice today is to choose to rely on a power source greater than myself. So arriving at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us, so God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. I guess I didn't finish off that thought, so it's not on here. But what the book, Big Book, had to say, and what the book, Big Book says is that, you know, all we have to have is a little bit of faith to open up that door. But guess what? The moment that self-will takes over, we can slam that very same door by our own self-will. That brings me to the last F, the fatalness of my disease. This disease of compulsive overeating has taken so very much from me. I have lost eyesight. I have lost some of my mobility. I am taking medications so that I don't black out. I was just in the ER 2 weeks ago. This disease, not only cunning, baffling, and powerful, it is fatal. We have lost limbs. We have lost lives because of this disease. How much more are we willing to lose? I don't only want to live today. And by the way, I'm 72. I want to live a good, worthwhile life, whatever time I have left on this earth. I don't want to be in food fights. Because guess what? Every time I get into a food fight, you know who wins? The food. I'm tired of struggling. I'm tired of fighting. I want to strive. I want to thrive today. So again, I put aside my fears. I step out in faith. And I share my experience, my strength, and my hope that this program has given me. And I also remember the OA Responsibility Pledge. And that is why I'm here today. Oh, always to extend the heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. Thank you.